And I remember laying there, and there was a point where I said, okay, I have two options here. I can either be physically limited or physically and mentally limited.
I've always felt immense fear.
I was born with cerebral palsy.
I have always felt small.
I was told not to take risks.
I may be blind, but I teach people how to see.
And I'm proud to be an individual.
This podcast is for you, the unconventional leader.
Maybe you are the one that everyone discounted.
Maybe you struggle with fear and self-doubt.
We are here to empower the next generation of self-starters to step up,
use their voice, and make an impact in this world.
You're listening to the Weekly Parody.
Hey, welcome to today's episode. I am so grateful for you. Thank you so much for taking the time to check out this episode. Today, I talked with Alex Plasky. Man, this guy has a story. If you are someone who loves to listen to other people's stories and hear not only how they have overcome certain things, but how they've used what they have gone through as a platform to change the lives of those around them, you are going to adore this guy and what he has created out in the world. His very first memory, which he'll share with you here in a minute, is living in a vehicle with his parents and four siblings. He ended up in the foster care system, lost his father, and then in ninth grade was in an accident where a horse threw him and he ended up in a wheelchair. This guy has the most incredible perspective about what tragedy and hard circumstances do for a person and how they actually propel you towards your purpose and place you in a position that you can make a greater impact in this world. The knowledge that this guy drops, he is in his early 20s, makes me just want to holla and have church. This is such an incredible episode, and I know you're going to gain so much value. But before we get started, if you have not subscribed to this podcast, head over to iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. We are on YouTube now. I'm going to be doing weekly videos on there, and you can see some behind-the-scenes stuff with the interviews. Definitely check that out. Hit subscribe. And then we have a private Facebook group. We've been having some awesome conversations on there, brainstorming with one another about how to grow our businesses and our platforms and ultimately make a difference in this world. So if you're looking for a tribe of like-minded people, head over there. We will welcome you with open arms. All right, guys, let's get into this episode, How to Find Your Inner Strength with Alex Plasky. I'm always drawn to people who say they grown up in foster care, although I personally didn't. My father was raised in foster care his entire life, and I heard about it growing up, about his experiences and how difficult it was, and you know, the joys and the ups and the downs of all of it. So I just have this automatically a connection with you from that, because I always think of my father. Were you in foster care your entire life? Was it just part of your life? What happened?
It was part of my life. And I like how you say up and downs. And I think it goes on a general scale and for an individual one as well. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of foster care families that are there solely for the money and nothing else. And you can see through those motives. But then on the other hand, I mean, there are ones that are great families as well. And then, you know, yeah, even just for the ones that are, you know, you feel like it's a good fit. Sure, of course, there are ups and downs, and I completely agree with your dad. I lost my biological dad when I was around 9 years old to lung cancer, which threw us into the foster care system. And from 9 years to 16, I had been in a couple different homes. And actually before that, I was in a foster home as well, because with my biological family, we were known as county hoppers. We would be in a county, and then when we would get in trouble or they would learn that we didn't have the necessary food, clothing, or shelter, you know, we would go to another area, so that the jurisdiction would restart. And eventually they caught up with us. And that was with my biological family. So yeah, I was taken away from them, I want to say when I was like around maybe seven. And then for 2 years, I was with my first foster family, and we were reunited with our biological dad when he finally was back. And then right after that, I think roughly a year later than right, he died of cancer. And we got.
What about your mom? Was she there?
Ooh, good question. No, she wasn't. She has a few disorders, schizophrenia, bipolar, and a few other things. And while I have met many people that have all of those circumstances, they do absolutely great. But she was an individual that did not want help from others or take the certain steps to, you know, stay in that sanity. So when we were taken away, she actually booked it for California, and our biological dad was the only one trying to gain us back, gain custody.
Wow. So. Now, at one point you said that you were living in a vehicle. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. That actually is my first memory, was living in a vehicle. And it's funny because we didn't know any better. And I was with my other four siblings. And then shortly after, we were able to sleep in this homeless shelter. And I remember enjoying that homeless shelter so much. And it's like, wow, you actually, you know, we're at a point where something like that was a luxury. And yeah, then after that, you know, we kind of did a little more of that county hopping, like I said. But when you don't know any better, I mean, it's just life. Mm-hmm. And I think because of those things that I went through, you know, it made me for who I am today.
Yeah, 100%. So before you were taken away at 7 years old, your mom was there and your dad was both there, and it was all of the siblings. You said four siblings?
Four siblings.
So five children, and then your mom and dad.
Right. So it was, and initially when I was, you know, in the car homeless, I believe that was, I was a little younger, so there was still one on its way. But yeah, and with the siblings that I do have, me and I love them dearly. And I feel that because of the circumstances that we went through, me and a lot of them, they maybe didn't get to their full potential yet. I mean, there's five of us that are older than 18. All of us are above 18. Only two of us have any kind of, you know, diploma.
I was going to ask you about that with like education, because if you're bouncing around from different counties and stuff, how did that affect like going to school?
Oh, hugely.
Yeah.
That is with every single family. So like with our biological family, she made it a point to, you know, keep us away from social services. So I remember when we were in the trailer courts, we could not go and play outside until we saw the school bus go by, because then that gave the illusion, okay, school's out, now there should be kids out or whatever. And I didn't learn a whole lot with that family. I mean, the first time I did go to school was second grade, and that was with my first foster family. And because of that, I actually was held back. I guess I couldn't spell my name right or something. But yeah, so there was that. And then, you know, we got taken back, you know, to our biological dad. And at that time I did go to school. But then when I went to my second foster family, she, my adopted family, they were pretty heavily interested in not public schools at all. They wanted to do homeschooling. And even with them, you know, I say, well, for science, we learned how to clean the bathroom. For home ec, we learned how to do the dishes. For kitchen. So I didn't get a whole lot of education there either. And I want to say there was a couple years. So I went to school the second, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, then sixth grade, seventh grade, and eighth grade, I didn't go to school. I only went to school 1 month in eighth grade. And then I was in a new family. And then in that family, I did my ninth grade year. And then I had my accident. And with that, I had 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade, you know, in a public school as well. So there was education. There was definitely a gap. Yeah, they don't watch that, the state, like they should. I feel like when it comes to homeschool, there are people that are extremely educated or not that educated at all.
Yep. I could go on about that, but I'm going to leave that there. Before we kind of share what happened, you know, in high school with you, I want to know how you process through that. Like before you were taken into foster care, when you're living in the vehicles and you're bouncing around from state to state and you're kind of hiding, what was going on with you as like a little boy in your mind and your thoughts? Like, was this just normal life to you? Was it a struggle? How did you feel during that time?
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to say it was kind of like normal. I mean, this was just our reality. And when it comes to bouncing back and forth, I mean, I know some people that have been through the foster care system, or some that were not, you know, educated as well, and they didn't have that social side. I didn't feel I was affected that way, or I sure hope not. It just, yeah, kind of was the way that we lived. I look at that now and I see that path that I had taken, even like with the accident I had. I mean, a lot of people, they would consider those things burdens that you had gone through. Some people would say even, you know, those terrible situations. But for me, I view it and realize that actually those things, they're my strongest assets. And because of those things that I went through, I now can approach life differently, view life differently, and access things that I actually couldn't if I was in a walking state, if I was in a state that didn't go through those things.
Right.
And also, I feel that there, and I hate to generalize, but there are some people that are given like everything and they just aren't that nice of people, and they don't have strong worth ethics and stuff like that. And then you look at people that go through just terrible things, and their want and desire for, you know, change, a better life.
100%. Now you've brought it up a couple of times already. You said the accident. For those who don't know you, tell us about what happened in high school.
Oh, absolutely. This was my ninth grade year. It was with my last foster family. And I absolutely adored living there. You know, I learned how to do many things, cut down trees, build fences, you know, work with animals and whatnot. And one of the things that we did was train horses. And we would get a little commission for it. And during that second week of training, I remember walking outside. It was a beautiful day. It seemed just like any other day. And I got on the horse and I was starting to do the routine that I was trained to do for the previous ones. And all of a sudden, the horse got spooked. And it started to buck back and forth. And I remember before using to love that feeling, because you would get that adrenaline rush when, you know, the animal started to buck. So as it was doing that, I pulled its head to the side, and I can't remember if the rein snapped or something, but I lost control. And because of the left foot getting stuck in the stirrup, I hit my neck on the ground, and life forever changed from that point. I became a C4 quadriplegic, and I remember laying there, and I said, can somebody get me a pillow? And then my foster daddy had came by and he said, I'm sorry, Alex, I can't do that. And I was in such tremendous pain. I said, really, for all I've done for you and you can't even get me a pillow? Not even realizing that that would even escalate the broken fractures even more. And it's crazy because as I was laying there, I didn't even realize that I couldn't move, that I couldn't feel my body below my nipple line. And as I was waiting for help, the lifeline finally came and they put me in the stretcher and then on the helicopter and I flew to St. Cloud. There's a hospital there in Minnesota. And I had my surgery and it was crazy. A month or a week later, even after the accident, I was laying there and this guy nurse, he was giving me some pills and I choked on them. And I was having a hard time breathing. Then after an hour of struggling, I said, you know what, guys, you do what you gotta do. And then they put me under and then I woke up and then there was this tube sticking out of my neck connected to a ventilator. And I was, you know, now vent dependent. Soon after I had my surgery, and then I want to say after a month of being there, I went to Gillette Children's, met some wonderful people, and did my rehabilitation. You know, learning how to do things over, learning how to feed myself, how to, you know, brush my teeth, doing some basic things that you do as a child, but you just have to teach your body how to do it. So shortly after that, then yeah, I went and returned home to Alexandria.
So when I first heard your story, when you were on the phone a couple months ago, I was so just initially angry because I thought, here is a guy who already has lived through hell. Already, you know, experienced a lot of stuff with his biological family, was taken away from them. You lost your mom, you lost your dad, you're in and out of foster care. You're already like dealing with all this stuff, which I know now you have a different perspective, but you know, looking at it realistically, like you've been through just hell. And then, you know, in ninth grade, you lose your ability to walk. And when I heard that, I was just like initially angry just for you. I didn't even know you because I'm like, what the hell? Like, why does this have to happen to this guy? Yeah. You know, why can't he cut a break? Did you feel that anger like when this happened to you? What was it like processing through that as a young man who's already been through so much?
You know, that is an excellent question. And I didn't have that anger or resentment. And I really think it was because of all of the things that had happened before my accident, you know, with losing my dad, with going through the foster care system and other things as well. And because of that, it was just like another bump in the road. And I remember laying there and there was a point where I said, okay, I have two options here. I can either be physically limited or physically and mentally limited. Because no matter what my viewpoint was, if I was happy, mad, pissed off, it's not going to change anything. Not physically, at least, because I was still going to be in that wheelchair at the end of the day. And I remember having that realization, and it's like, you know what? I am going to try things different and still make a life out of what I still have. I mean, there's 24% of people in my condition with spinal cord injuries that work. And I think that's crazy. And there's a huge reason behind that, mainly because of the viewpoints that people have. Also like 12% of people in a relationship. And it definitely depends on the viewpoint that they have. So I said, no, this is going to be okay, and I'm going to work through this.
Alex, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. I'm gonna kind of prom that a little bit more you know, I think that's why people are so drawn to you and they love you so much, because you just have this insane positive energy that, like, I don't know many people who have. And like you said, you feel like that's your strength because you've been through so much. You've been able to adapt that. But there's so many of us, myself included, who have been through things. And it's like, it just pulls us apart and tears us apart. Mm. And, you know, as somebody so young, I mean, I can almost kind of see, understand you having that perspective now as a grown man, but as a young guy, I mean, that's a very mature, very self-aware thing to come to at a very early age. So is that something you were just born with? Where did you learn that?
I have been told I am an old soul. I want to say, even when I was like around 9 years old, I remember that I used to make friends with people that were in their like 30s and 40s and just the conversations we had. And I'm not perfect. I mean, I feel that all of us have a couple things. So like for me, with the circumstances, like being in a wheelchair, that truly, I mean, I don't feel resentment towards that. And I know that is something that is a strong asset for me. But as like for like, let's say relationships, I mean, if I would say I would have one, and I don't like to call it a downside, that has a negative connotation. But if I would say I'd have one thing that I am not real, and I don't want to say good at either, but before my accident, I had gone out with like 6 different ladies. And
before your accident?
Right.
Man, you were an awesome ninth grader, man. When I was in ninth grade, like, dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, I didn't go to school 6th grade, 7th grade, only 1 month in 8th grade. So I went to school 9th grade. I'm like, what is this dating stuff? And it's like, okay, I'm going to try this too. Okay. And obviously, I tried it a little more than others. But anyways, then after the accident, you know, I hadn't really connected with somebody. And I feel like that's one of my strongest assets, as well as the connectiveness. And there's many different sides for that. And for me, I have such, you know, a passion for helping people, for connectiveness, you know, that side. So with not having that, I mean, sure, you know, was there some hard days? Not for the accident, but for like something like that. And that really brings me to location. And there's many things in life where things definitely could be better in whatever area of life you're in. And the best advice I have for that is to find where you would be more successful. So for instance, even like with speaking for this relationship stuff, I'm in a location that it's a numbers game, and finding somebody, you know, that would be like the right fit, you know, it could be more difficult. So, and like speaking as well, you know, I'm kind of located in a remote area, and definitely, yeah, go for what you want, and realize the law of probability, and there, as long as you just keep on going with it, you're gonna eventually find what you're looking for.
Amen. So I got a couple just more curious questions, because I told at the beginning I was just gonna pry all into your life. But so after the accident, did you stay with that foster family, or like what happened with that?
No, I did not. Because of the legalities of actually getting hurt there and stuff, they located me to the same town. I'm still in Alexandria, but
that's the city of the Walking Dead. Have you seen that show?
Ooh, love that show.
Don't tell me what happens. I'm only in season 6 right now, but they're in Alexandria right now. I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I just had a moment when you said that name. I was like,
No, interrupt any time.
Like, don't live there. It's dangerous. Anyway.
I just started the last season as well.
Oh, don't tell me.
Just couple in. But yeah, but going back to that, yeah, they located me at Alexandria. There aren't dead people here. You're welcome to come.
Okay. That's
but it was a location that they had more expertise in, you know, helping people. So like with me at 24-hour nursing and the place that I am at, they have, you know, a bath that is lifted up off the ground. They have a Hoyer lift, you know, things like that,
right,
that are required, you know, for quadriplegia. So that was the primary reason why I was located into a new place. And as for like growing up, when I hit that stage of, okay, now I don't have foster parents, like I pretty much was on my own.
Wow.
I mean, sure, I had, you know, nurses and they were taking care of me, but really it came down to, I mean, now I have to make the decisions to better my health, to better myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was the parent.
Yeah. So how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm going to turn 23 this Christmas Eve.
You're a baby. You're so young. Yeah. I'm like 10 years older than you, dude. It's crazy.
Really? Well, you don't look it at all.
Oh, well, I like you officially. Appreciate it. So let's kind of transition into, I could ask you a million questions just about your life. I hope one day you write a book. Please do that. It would just be fascinating. But I want to, you know, we've already kind of gone past our time, but I want to transition into the work that you're doing right now. Because not only is this guy just has a beautiful energy and has such a great outlook for, you know, the stuff that he's gone through and looking at it positively, he's also decided to help other people and use this story to change people's lives. And that's what this show is all about, is unconventional leadership. And I think you embody that so much. But tell me, what made you decide to kind of take your story, your message, and start making videos and building a platform online?
I was waiting for funding to come for my college. So being disabled, there are a few benefits other than the free parking. And one of them is the government giving you funding for your school so that you don't live off the government the rest of your life. And as I was waiting, I was like, Alex, you know, what do we need to do here? And I decided to buy 23 self-development books. You know, I listened to 17 in 3 months. I took extensive notes and it's like, wait a second, maybe I could like do some kind of program, some kind of speaking with this. And I know it would benefit others. You know, this information's really helping me. And that's another thing, like growth. You can only grow so much through self-development. I've invested, now it's over $10,000 in the courses, the programs, the things that I've been part of. And there comes a point where to grow farther is by helping other people grow.
Amen.
And I reached that point where it's like, okay, now I know the tools to become successful, to become happy in whatever area of life. Now it's time to help others as well. And that's what I did. You know, I became certified through the Jack Canfield, through the success principles.
You don't mind me asking, how in the world did you even come across self-development? Because that's not like a normal thing that most kids just run across.
You know, that's a really good question. And when it comes to the train the trainer, the Jack Canfield, it was just a matter of luck. But as for the audio books, I wonder, boy, I don't even know. I don't know for the start of the audiobooks, but as for like the program that I got certified through, it just happened to show up, maybe because of the search results that I was doing. But yeah, and then there was a deal since it was Christmas time, and I invested in it. And I am so glad that I did, because being able to help others, I mean, it really does. I was working with a client just a couple days ago, and the epiphanies that she had, I mean, it makes you feel really good. And seeing them go to the next level, it brings a sense of gratitude.
Yeah, 100%. Now, I have one last question. Like I said, I could talk to you for another hour. But before I do that, I want to give you an opportunity to kind of share what you have going on online. And I also just want to acknowledge you, because I feel like you have such a strong calling on your life, something that is on you. And I think we all have a calling, but there's something specific about you. I believe that the hand of God is on you, and that you have something to deliver this world, and you're going to change so many people's lives. And I really feel like I'm going to be like, oh, I knew him when, because for you to have the energy and attitude that you do, it's insane. I haven't met many people like that. But anyway, I could go on and on. Where can people connect with you online?
Yes. For connecting with me, you can search my main platform, which is Alex P. Plasky, and that's on Facebook. That's where I post all of my free content, which is I do daily videos on how to self-develop yourself. And it's, you know, different topics every time, and I give it for free. So if you are ready to take yourself to the next level, if you want to, you know, do it by yourself, take the information. Like I said, I mean, the stuff that I'm teaching, I've paid over $10,000 to learn about it. So it's very valuable. And that is the area. As for a website, if you are looking for a speaker, you can just search at alexpplasky.com. And Plasky, it's spelled P-L-A-S-K-Y.
Cool. And you're heading to California soon, right?
Absolutely am, yes. I look forward to those. You know, and that, going back to, you know, the law of probability that I was talking about earlier, I mean, I have 5 million people in Minnesota. And the reach that I have is way less than that. You know, it's in just a little circle. But going to California, I'm going to be living in LA, and I have 5 million people just in that town, that city. So I plan to inspire, I plan to transform many lives by the work that I do.
You will. I know you will. All right, Alex, our last question. This show is for unconventional leaders, people who come from unconventional places and lead in unconventional ways. What would you say if you had 60 seconds, let's say you had an arena full of people who have been through similar things as you, who have just struggled, you know, feel like, when am I going to catch a break? But they feel called to something big. They feel like they have a message within them and that they're supposed to do something with their lives. But there's that hesitation because they say, who am I to do this? Mm. I don't have the resources, I don't have this, I don't have that, et cetera, et cetera. Let's say you had just 1 minute to share something with that arena full of leaders. What would you say?
Okay. As for, I don't have the resources, the whatever, I mean, you have Google. Google, you can Google anything. YouTube, oh boy, if you want to be a master in your field, I mean, if you want to not take all that time, sure, invest in a course. But if you have the time, oh yeah, you can learn anything out.
Come on.
And after those minds, boy, how many seconds do I have here? As for those limiting beliefs, I'd say you want to shut them down right away. You should read the book by Mel Robbins, The 5-Second Rule. And that is a rule where you go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and before you hit one, you actually go to do what you do, because it's a biological function for our minds to give us self-doubt, to have fear of rejection, or fear in general, which I like to say is an acronym for false experience appearing real. But yeah, just saying, you know what? Nope, this is something I want. Have a strong why, have clarity on what you want, and go make it happen.
Come on. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you have not subscribed yet, please head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and hit that subscribe button. And also, if you have a second, leave us a review. Lastly, we have a private Facebook group. If you are looking for a tribe of like-minded leaders who are unconventional in their approach, but dedicated to making an impact, head over to Facebook and type in Unconventional Leaders, and we will be sure to add you. You guys have a great week.